Alabama is home to the most diverse forests and aquatic systems in this country, with more species per square mile than any other state. But Alabama's wild places have also suffered mightily since the 1800s, and are at risk today, with species after species becoming extinct after generations of logging, mining, and other industry. Ben Raines captures the breathtaking natural beauty of his native Alabama through his photos and his words in his book, Saving America's Amazon, The Threat to Our Nation's Most Biodiverse River System, published by New South Books. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Oh, sure. Thank you for having me, Ray. I'm really glad to be here.
When we talk about Alabama as a biodiversity hotspot, if somebody's hearing us say this for the first time, unpack that a little bit.
Well, it kind of is counterintuitive to the narrative we've heard about Alabama and the South in general, that these are places where in the public mind, it's all about civil rights movement, nowadays football and industry, steel mills and cotton and stuff like that. So missing in this is the natural landscape here, which somehow has not been celebrated the same way a lot of our other landscapes have been celebrated. You think of the West with the iconic mountains and that kind of stuff. But it turns out that one of the most biologically rich places in the United States is right here in the Southeast, and kind of the epicenter is Alabama. There are more animals and plants here per square mile than any other state. And in fact, there are twice as many as any other state. Now, following close behind Alabama in some of these categories is Tennessee. Tennessee also has very high aquatic diversity. You know, Alabama, for instance, has 97 species of crawfish or crayfish, the most in the nation by far. Tennessee has 83. So it's number two. And it's for the same reasons. You know, this part of the country didn't freeze during the ice ages the way so much of the country did. So many things that have evolved here are still here. They haven't died out. And so that's a huge factor when we talk about biodiversity, is the length of time things have had to evolve. And so here it's in the millions of years.
Part of the delta that you write about, part of that extends into here in Southeast Tennessee.
Well, it does. In fact, you know, this delta, the Mobile Tensaw Delta, which is named after the Mobile River, drains part of Tennessee, part of Mississippi, part of Georgia, and most of Alabama. So it's a huge drainage. And so it does pull in that diversity in the other states. You know, nationally, this is the third largest river system by water volume, after the Mississippi and the Columbia. So there's a lot of water coming through the state of Alabama. And, you know, water and plentiful sunlight, which we have, are kind of the magic recipes for life. If you have those two things in abundance, you'll have a lot of life, as opposed to where if you just have one or the other, say a desert where you don't have the water. They're rich habitats, but they are not abundant the way the South is.
And then how does the Tennessee River, which runs through here in Chattanooga, play into this at all?
Well, so it doesn't drain into this system naturally. You know, we have the Ten Tom Waterway, which connects the Tennessee to the Tombigbee, which flows into this drainage. But the diversity along the Tennessee River corridor and that northern Alabama point, that's really one of the global hotspots for mussels. You know, the little basically living rocks in the water that filter the water. The lion's share of the world's mussel species are located in sort of the top half of Alabama and that touching chunk of Tennessee. And it's really stunning. And, you know, some of these mussels, people think of mussels like we eat, and that is a mussel, but that's one kind of mussel. You know, we have 150 some kinds in Alabama with these crazy names like heel splitters and pig toes and warty backs. And then some of them are gigantic. Some of them are literally as big around as like a cafeteria tray. And they're 100 years old. So to think of these shellfish in our rivers that were here at the end of the Civil War, it's really incredible.
And this biodiversity, it may be ignored or forgotten in this country, but scientists developing what became known as the theory of evolution, they turned to Alabama a few centuries ago.
Well, and that's one of the fascinating things. If you go back 200, 100 years ago, Alabama was a place people came to see things that you couldn't see anywhere else. Whether that was giant dinosaur bones that were popping up out of the ground or the incredible array of flowers, things like that. Alabama was known as this place where you could see creatures that existed nowhere else. And so in the fossil record, Alabama's reputation, even by the late 1700s, was already global. So by the early 1800s, we had the Smithsonian crews here in 1810, 1835, collecting dinosaurs that are still on display in the Smithsonian Museums in Washington, D.C. Well, as these things were being discovered, Europeans were coming here too to get these Alabama bones. and take back. In particular, a creature called the Zeuglodon, and now we call it a Bacillosaurus. But this was a 60 to 80 foot long aquatic. It was actually a whale, and it was preying on all these early dinosaurs and things in the water. Most of Alabama and parts of Tennessee were underwater for extensive periods, part of this great ocean. And that's when these creatures date to. So they're famous fossil formations related to when this was all underwater, all over the state. In particular, in Alabama, there's an area called the Claiborne Bluffs. There's a man named Charles Lyell, who was the father of modern geology, I mean, globally. And he was an English guy. And he actually came to Alabama to study the fossil formations here in 1850, just before the Civil War. And he was making comparisons to what he was seeing in the fossils in England, in France, and other places in Europe. And he was seeing that there were creatures that were common in both places. For instance, the Birmingham, England coal fields, and then Birmingham, Alabama, the coal fields there. He was seeing similar species. Then he was seeing species in each place that didn't live in the other across the ocean. So he had this idea that, wow, well, some things only live over there, but some of these live all over the place. It was the beginning of the theory of evolution. And he had this idea, looking at these things over time, he realized he was seeing a record of time, of history, with the different fossils. Some, you know, they'd be really prominent in a layer, and then higher up in a more modern layer, they would have disappeared. Well, so Charles Lyell turned out to be Charles Darwin's mentor. And he wrote a book about geology that Darwin was really influenced by. When he sailed to the Galapagos on the Beagle, he wrote about, I'm seeing the world through Lyell's eyes, meaning he was seeing how these rock formations and the fossils were this record of time and everything. So Lyell, through his studies comparing Alabama and Europe, gave Darwin the element of time he needed to come up with the theory of evolution, the idea that creatures change over time in response to whatever, their environment or new conditions. But that idea that the Earth was millions of years old was a radical one when Lyell first posited it based on his trips here to the American South. Because at the time, the Church of England insisted the world was only 6,000 years old and that all creatures on it and everything that had ever happened in it lived in this brief little window. It irks some people to hear me say it, but Alabama played a pivotal role in the theory of evolution.
How about that for a plot twist?
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of plot twists, the story begins to change when we talk about America's Amazon with industrialization, whether we're talking about the steel mills you mentioned earlier or the coming of the dams.
Yeah. So from the very start, almost as soon as the scientists from other places were coming here to study our plants and animals, late 1700s, early 1800s, they also realized the industrial uses that could come from these rivers. And we began turning the rivers to our purposes in the 1800s, first building locks to facilitate barge traffic. Well, what that was about was getting cotton and coal from the top of the state down to the Gulf of Mexico. So we began altering the rivers back then. And our story with the rivers is very one-sided. It's all us taking from the rivers. And so what we've done now is created a very fractured system of the rivers. Alabama has 30 major dams, which is a very high number. And those dams together are responsible for more extinctions than any other factory in the history of the United States. In fact, since the 1850s, more than half of all U.S. extinctions have happened in Alabama. So we had all this diversity. We have all this diversity, but we've been whacking away at it, causing the extinction of different creatures for well over 100 years. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting situation where, yes, we are number one in aquatic diversity, more species of fish, turtles, mussels, snails, salamanders, all these things. But we're also the leader in the extinctions of all those same things. And we can't go on forever being the number one in diversity and the number one in extinctions. And so we're at this kind of moment where Alabama's got to decide if it's going to step up and protect this incredible biological heritage, which has all kinds of potential uses that we don't even understand yet. You know, we talk about the cure for cancer being found in the Amazonian rainforest. It's just as likely to be found here in these Alabama jungles, which have barely been explored. That's the really interesting thing. This idea of Alabama as a diverse place is new. Along with Tennessee and the rest of the South, this only was revealed in about 2002, when somebody finally added up all the species in every state. And people were stunned to see this tier of southern states high in the rankings. You know, Alabama is now the fourth highest state in overall diversity of all creatures. When I started writing the book, we were fifth. So we've knocked New Mexico off the list. Arizona only has 83 more species than Alabama. We're going to knock them off soon. because since I wrote the book, we've discovered well over 100 new species. We're finding new species here all the time. So that whack we've taken from industry is still devastating the state. Alabama has the weakest environmental laws in the nation. Alabama spends less to protect the environment than any other state and has for decades. And you see that here. The state's attitude toward regulating industry is completely unusual and out of step with all other states. And the difference is how we enforce pollution laws. In Alabama, you know, in most states, Tennessee, for instance, the pollution is measured by the regulators at the pipe where it comes out of a factory and hits the river. You have to be down to that level of pollution at the end of the pipe. In Alabama, they give industry a mixing zone of a mile in the river. So the pollution level that's enforced in other states, in Alabama, industry can dump raw toxins straight in the water. As long as a mile downstream, they're down to the permitted level where the other states have to be at the pipe. Alabama has made a decision to use our rivers as industrial sewage treatment plants. And there's no other way to say it. That's a fact.
And you have covered that in your journalism, and you have practiced that in your environmental activism. And you are a charter captain. To the extent that somebody can get out there and see all of this firsthand, you do it all the time.
In fact, I was on the water yesterday. And, you know, I was out almost every day in April, and it's just magnificent. I will provide you a link to a little video I put up that shows people what this place looks like and why I call it America's Amazon. And it's a stunning wilderness. This is one of the largest contiguous wilderness wetland complexes in North America. You can get in the boat, you're 5 minutes from downtown Mobile, and within 5 minutes from the boat ramp, you are in a wilderness where it would be very easy to die. You could get eaten by an alligator, eaten by a bull shark, bit by five different kinds of poisonous snakes, killed by a small bobcat or a bear. And this is all 5 minutes from the boat ramp. It's a true wilderness, and it is glorious. The flowers, the birds, you know, we have 280 species of migrating birds that come through. So when you get out there, it is, I've had people who've been to the Amazon, people who've been to Vietnam, to the jungles there, who say this is a jungle, a world-class jungle on par with those. And it really is. I invite people to come down and get on the boat for a day. It's a transformative experience. No one understands that this exists in Alabama. And most people don't understand this exists in America, this kind of wilderness. It's a spectacular place.
How did you decide to become a charter captain, and what did it take to become one?
So I became a charter captain because I was a longtime newspaper reporter and could see the newspaper industry disintegrating around me and said, you know, I need a fallback. And I am a good fisherman, and I've spent a lot of time on the water. And I said, I think I'll get a captain's license. And I did that with an eye toward either taking people fishing or taking people up in the Delta. So I started about 7 years ago running tours. It quickly became apparent to me that the right direction for me was nature tours. Based on my career, I've built a skill set that is different from what a fishing charter captain, you know, has. I mean, I can go catch a fish, but I can also identify all the little bugs and birds and flowers and things we see. And I've learned my way around this giant swamp, which, you know, we're talking about 300,000 acres, and it is full of twisty, turny streams and sandbars. And, you know, I pull a lot of people off mud bars who get stuck out there because they don't know where they're going. But, you know, it's been a great side gig that's become one of my main ways to make a living. You know, I'm no longer a practicing daily journalist. A lot of times that feels like a really good thing these days when you see the latest rounds of cuts at newspapers and things. But that's why the book was so important to me. I want to communicate the importance of these areas. I want to communicate how delicate they are, how close we are to losing them, and how close we are to saving them, and to try and help people make the decision towards saving them through, you know, sharing my love for it. I mean, I look at the book as a love letter to Alabama's wild places. I hope a lot of other people read it and fall in love with them too.
And for people who want to follow all that you do online, where can they go?
Well, I have a Facebook page, and if you want to be my friend, I will be your friend. I have an Instagram page, and those are my two kind of main outlets. I'm happy to email with people or message with people or whatever if they want to hear about the charters. There's an NPR story about taking one of my charters from a few years ago. And you know, the Delta is an incredible place. There are all kinds of mysteries out there. And one of the largest and most spectacular would be the last slave ship, the last ship that brought enslaved Africans to America, which I actually found in the Delta, the Clotilda. And I have a new book coming out in January about that. But, you know, the idea that this swamp was somewhere big enough that you could hide a ship and have it remain hidden for 160 years tells you a lot about the swamp and its kind of magic and mystery. It's that kind of place where you can get lost and never be found.
Well, Ben, I'm glad that I found out about this book, and I thank you for your time, and I look forward to speaking with you about the next book in the next year.
Can't wait. You know, if people want to buy the book and are having trouble finding it, it's certainly on Amazon and all that. A lot of local bookstores have it, certainly in Alabama. And if you can't track a copy down or you want a signed copy, reach out to me through Facebook, and I will try and work out getting you one.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thank you, Rick.